For the next several days, I tried to avoid situations where my mother and I might be forced to talk. Then, a few days before they were about to leave, my mother noticed a letter addressed to my father in my hand. I asked her if she had an international postage stamp. "You guys arranging for a visit?" she asked. I told her briefly of plans to visit Kenya. "Well, I think it would be wonderful for you two to finally get to know each other," she said. "He was probably a bit tough for a 10-year-old to take, but now that you're older..." I shrugged. "Who knows," I said. "I hope you don't feel resentful towards him." "Why would I?" "I don't know." We sat there for a while, and then, without any prompting, my mother began to retell an old story, in a distant voice, as if she were telling it to herself. "It wasn't your father's fault that he left, you know. I divorced him. When the two of us got married, your grandparents weren't happy with the idea, but they said okay. They probably couldn't have stopped us anyway, and they eventually came around to the idea that it was the right thing to do. Then Barack's father, your grandfather, Hussein, wrote Gramps this long, nasty letter saying he didn't approve of the marriage. He didn't want the Obama blood sullied by a white woman, he said. Well, you can imagine how Gramps reacted to that. And then there was a problem with your father's first wife. He had told me they were separated, but it was a village wedding, so there were no legal documents that could show a divorce." My mother's chin began to tremble, and she bit down on her lip, steadying herself. She said, "Your father wrote back saying he was going to go ahead with it. Then you were born, and we agreed that the three of us would return to Kenya after he finished his studies. But your grandfather Hussein was still writing to your father, threatening to have his student visa revoked." By this time, Toot had become hysterical. She had read about the Mau Mau rebellion in Kenya a few years earlier, which the Western press really played up, and she was sure that I would have my head chopped off and you would be taken away. Even then, it might have worked out. When your father graduated from University of Hawaii, he received two scholarship offers. One was to the New School here in New York. The other one was to Harvard. The New School agreed to pay for everything, room and board, a job on campus, enough to support all three of us. Harvard just agreed to pay tuition. But Barack was such a stubborn bastard, he had to go to Harvard. "How can I refuse the best education?" he told me. That's all he could think about, proving he was the best. My mother sighed, running her hands through her hair. Later, when he came to visit us in Hawaii that time, he wanted us to come live with him. But I was still married to Lolo then, and his third wife had just left him, and I just didn't think. She stopped and laughed to herself. "Did I ever tell you that he was late for our first date? He asked me to meet him in front of the university library at 1. When I got there, he hadn't arrived, but I figured I'd give him a few minutes. It was a nice day, so I laid out on one of the benches, and before I knew it, I had fallen asleep. Well, an hour later, he shows up with a couple of his friends. I woke up, and the three of them were standing over me, and I heard your father saying, serious as he can be, 'You see, gentlemen, I told you that she was a fine girl and that she would wait for me.'" My mother laughed once more, and once again I saw her as the child she had been. In her smiling, slightly puzzled face, I saw what all children must see at some point if they are to grow up. Their parents' lives revealed to them as separate and apart, reaching out beyond the point of their union or the birth of a child, lives unfurling back to grandparents, great-grandparents, an infinite number of chance meetings, misunderstandings, projected hopes, limited circumstances. My mother was that girl, with the movie of beautiful black people in her head, flattered by my father's attention, confused and alone, trying to break out of the grip of her own parents' lives. The innocence she carried that day, waiting for my father, had been tinged with misconceptions, her own needs. But it was a guileless need, one without self-consciousness. And perhaps that's how any love begins. Impulses and cloudy images that allow us to break across our solitude, and then, if we're lucky, are finally transformed into something firmer. What I heard from my mother that day, speaking about my father, was something that I suspect most Americans will never hear from the lips of those of another race, and so cannot be expected to believe might exist between black and white. The love of someone who knows your life in the round, a love that will survive disappointment. She saw my father as everyone hopes at least one other person might see him. She had tried to help the child who never knew him see him in the same way. And it was the look on her face that day that I would remember when a few months later I called to tell her that my father had died and heard her cry out over the distance.